It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
We're both just feeling loud and proud today.
We're very excited. We are very close to the end of The Dragon Reborn. So I think it's just the climactic energy.
It's the ramping up.
Well, hi. This is Anne. That's Matt. This is Cool Story. We are on season 3, and this is The Dragon Reborn.
That sounded very like Masterpiece Theater.
I'm Laura Linney, and this is Masterpiece Classic. Well, I have a bit of news, which I don't know if you've seen, but just yesterday or the day before, it was announced that in addition to the Wheel of Time TV show, they are going to create a movie trilogy. And
really?
That trilogy is going to be based on the Age of Legends prior to the breaking of the world.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know anything. I've literally never heard of like the person who's attached to it, although I know that they've done some things, but nothing I can judge like the quality of their work on. So I don't know whether to be excited or terrified.
I'm going to depend on other Wheel of Time heads out there.
One of the fan names that is like ardently rejected by the fandom that I think is really funny, and so I use it all the time, is Wheelies. So all you Wheelies out there, let me know what you think about that movie trilogy. Here's the thing, the positive spin I will put on this. At least it's not, when I first read the headline, I was like, what are they thinking doing a TV show and also a movie about that same plot line at the same time? But it's going to be prior to. So I feel like if it's terrible, we can just ignore that it happened. And if it's incredible, it can be like, you know, source material, interesting vibe of what came before kind of stuff.
Yeah. Is there a lot of text written about the Age of Legends, or is it going to be mostly like created for the movie?
Yeah, I guess what I will say is there's limited material to like directly translate.
Okay.
So we'll see.
We shall see.
What you got?
All I had was, we went to go see Cruella in the movie theater the other day.
I've heard generally negative reviews about it, but how was it?
Here's what I'll say.
Okay.
The most important part about the whole experience was that this was the first time Davey and I have gone to a movie theater since pandemic started.
Yeah. Oh, that must have been kind of fun and weird.
It was. It was, but it was really, I really needed to do something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing I'm in this house with the dogs.
24/7.
Literally 24/7, especially right now with the car situation.
Yeah.
And it was just so nice.
To be in a different location.
Yes. So that's number one. Number two, having been in the house cooped up with a dog so long, there were multiple points in the movie, since it's, you know, Cruella dogs. And dogs.
Yeah.
When I'd hear the sound like of a dog whining or making a sound, and I would look down at the ground to see if my dog was okay. In the movie theater.
Oh, God.
It was like, oh, no. And I was also thinking sometimes when I was watching the movie, like, ooh, this is too loud. I need to turn this down. My neighbors are going to complain.
Oh.
That is weird. So,
yeah.
It was a weird experience. If you haven't gone to a movie theater or something like that, I highly encourage you. It helped make me feel more normal Matt again a little bit.
Fun.
You know? So,
yeah.
And as far as the movie goes, I thought visually it was beautiful for the most part.
Sure.
But yeah, and as far as plotline, I thought it was generally fine. I liked it. I didn't, you know, I'm going to see a Disney movie, Cruella. I'm not looking to see a cinematic masterpiece that is going to be, yes, it'll be beautiful and enjoyable, but I'm not really going to this type of movie to see, like, you know, an Oscar, Academy Award winning.
Emotion evoking. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not looking for a psychological roller coaster. So
right, you're looking for brain candy.
I'm looking for an enjoyable movie that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And it definitely did that. The only thing I would say is even for this type of movie, there was some really lazy writing a few times. Like there were two points in the movie where like, well, they were just like, well, we're going to wrap this up in one scene and we're just going to figure it out here. We'll give you like the whole, I hate when they do that. When you see a movie and their idea of like a clever twist is just someone telling you a backstory. You know what I mean?
So essentially the final season of Game of Thrones. I have one more recommendation. I mentioned this on our other podcast, but it's so good that I have to recommend it on both of our podcasts. So there's a podcast that I recently started listening to. And I've only listened to like the first four, but I've listened to about four episodes. It is called Yo, Is This Racist? And it is a duo who hosts it named Andrew T. and
Tawny
Newsome. And essentially the premise is that people can call in, leave a voicemail with a question about race in some way, race or racism, and they like discuss it and tease out the nuances, and it's phenomenal. So highly recommend it. It will get you thinking and it will also entertain you. So I can't recommend it enough.
I'm definitely checking that out. Totally going to subscribe. I feel like that is just exactly the type of show I'd like to listen to.
Yeah, for sure. Great. Well, shall we get into the story? Well, here we are.
This is a special treat because this episode we're doing multiple chapters. We always do multiple chapters, but we're doing four chapters this week.
Four chapters. Because when I looked ahead, I was like, oh, these are shorter chapters. But I think what actually happened is you got two short chapters and I got two long chapters.
No, well, the first three chapters are all about equal length.
Okay.
Your last chapter, though, is quite long. I was like, yes. Oh, poor N. So we'll be doing chapters 51 through 54 today. So when you hear us ending 52, don't run away.
Exactly. Don't just hang up.
They're like, why is there still like 15 minutes, 20 minutes episode left? So chapter 51 is called Bait for the Net, and the icon for it is silhouettes, the little heads, and that usually indicates Black Aja.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Nynaeve chapter, finally.
Yay!
So Nynaeve, she is, for a moment, believing that she had spotted Rand in the distance. But then a wagon kind of goes by, and there's no one there afterwards. It's a very, like, movie moment.
Yes.
You know? These visions. Oh, never mind.
I would love to, like, I feel like they'll do those moments so well on TV. Like, we'll see, like, clearly Rand sort of, like, out of focus walking behind Nynaeve or something.
Mm-hmm. And then, I must have just seen that. That's so easy, you know?
Yeah.
Strange things are continuing to happen around them, but what's really got Nynaeve's attention is the price gouging in this place. She's sickened by it.
She is so, what's the word I'm looking for?
Peeved?
Like, she's peeved, but she's also very, not really stingy, but she is, like, frugal. So reluctant to spend money.
Yeah, she's frugal.
Yes, thank you, frugal.
She's thrifty. She's arguing with a butcher over the price of meat before finally giving in, and it says, quote, the prices were outrageous for everything, the quality inevitably poor, and almost no one seemed to care. And I was like, wow, is this my town?
I thought you were going to tell a joke and say, and quote, I need six eggs. That's too expensive.
My literal next line I wrote, this is literally an I need six eggs. That's too expensive moment.
See, I'm a music psychic. I told you.
It is. It really is that moment
really
to the
is.
Nth
yes.
degree. Yeah, so she's pissed at this butcher, and she's remembering that Elaine had explained that the grain in Carrion had been eaten by rats, and it's affected trade and prices and scarcity, and I guess, you know, Elaine's an economics major now, so all that kind of stuff. So it's not surprising to Nynaeve, but she still doesn't like it.
Wait, did you say Elaine is an economics expert?
Yeah, Elaine's the one that explained it all to her.
Well, she's like a ruling class person, so she would have been educated on all of that.
I mean, I guess so, but like, that doesn't interest me, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love that kind of stuff.
Oh, I took economics in school, my last run at it, and I was like, oof, just get me through this.
I guess what I'll say is I like kind of the general theory of how economies operate.
Oh, sure.
I don't like to get into the nitty-gritty of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. So then Nynaeve starts to muse about all the hardships that her and that the Two Rivers folk have endured, and the far worse circumstances that have befell them for far longer. And they've always gotten back up. We've seen that they are willful people. And, you know, everyone here seems to have accepted defeat. So she's not really feeling too bad for them. She's like, you have no idea. And I kind of get it. Because mm-hmm. it's kind of like when I'm at work and I'm like, oh, I'm so broke. And people are like, oh my God, me too. I haven't been on vacation in months. And I'm like, I ate red vines for every meal yesterday. Anyway, so she's growing increasingly frustrated as they wait to hear information about the Tarangriel and the Black Aja. Where is this guy? And she's feeling like, you know, maybe I'm on edge because of the bad dreams I'm having. And she's realizing, like, they're all having bad dreams, though. And Egwene hasn't even visited Teleron Riad. It's just the regular Baal Zaman-inspired terrible dreams.
Right.
She turns a corner just then and encounters Juilin Sandar. And he's like, hey, so, I've been looking for you. I found these women you speak of, but you didn't mention that they're, you know, guests of the High Lord's Saman. And Nynaeve is like, oh, okay, that's okay. We can roll with that, you know, and, you know, just come with me. All will be explained to your satisfaction, I promise. And he's like, okay, sure. And he kind of like goes with her to MG's place.
Mm-hmm.
And as they enter, almost immediately Nynaeve senses something is off. And when she sees MG in her chair, she drops her basket, knowing from her face and just the vibe in the room and what she's feeling that something is terribly, terribly, terribly wrong. And just then, Leandrin and a woman with black hair and a white streak enter the room from behind and basically tell her, like, it's over. And yeah. Nynaeve swings around and strikes both of them in the mouth and face and tries to embrace Sidar right away. But the Black Aja have shielded her from it, and they start channeling. And it says, blows hit her from every side like fists and sticks pummeling her. Neither Leandrin, blood trickling from a corner of her now grim mouth, nor Rhianna, her hair as disarrayed as her green dress, lifted a hand. Nynaeve could feel the flows of air weaving about her as well as she could feel the blows themselves. She still struggled to reach the door, but she realized that she was on her knees now, and unseen blows would not stop, invisible sticks and fists striking at her back and her stomach, her head and her hips, her shoulders, her breasts, her legs, her head. Groaning, she fell onto her side and curled into a ball, trying to protect herself. Oh, light, I tried, Egwene. Elaine, I tried. I will not cry out, burn you. You can beat me to death, but I won't cry. Oh my god, this was like similarly to how I felt with Egwene being collared.
Yeah.
Because it's so brutal. It's not just like, oh, they're getting hit around and captured. That's like a real, like, serious, brutal beating.
Yeah.
Nynaeve.
I know. Oh my god.
But
our favorite.
So she lies there, and they say to her, or Leandrin says to her, perhaps you are too stupid to know when you are defeated, Wilder. You almost fought as wildly as the other foolish girl, that Egwene. She almost went mad. You all must learn to submit. You will learn to submit. And then the other woman, Rhianna, says that she will kill... She says that she'll kill MG. And Leandrin's like, cool it. We don't need to kill her. You know, like, you want to kill everybody. So just chill out. Instead, they tell her, never utter a word of this. If she ever does, they'll have her, like, tongue cut out. And she'll serve the Dark One for eternity if she does. So she agrees to keep her mouth shut, obviously. She's very sorry. You can tell she feels bad for, you know, having played a part in this at all.
Right.
Even though, you know, not intentionally, and Nynaeve kind of understands, and the Aja take Nynaeve outside, and she sees these large helmeted guards and breastplates and puffy red sleeves, and she sees, I'm really curious about these outfits, by the way.
Okay.
There's a later one, too, that's described similarly with, like, striped sleeves. Curious.
Yes.
So she sees with them two of the other 13 Black Aja, I'm assuming. So it's Amiko.
I think it's Amiko.
Oh, Amiko. See, I was reading Amiko. Okay, so Amiko, Nagoyan, and Joya Bayer.
Yeah.
And between them is Elaine, who has been roughed up pretty badly, and on the ground is Egwene, who's been beaten so badly, she's unconscious and almost unrecognizable.
Terrible.
So, yeah. Nynaeve shouts out, and she's punished with these unseen forces striking her in the mouth and on the body by Joya, and we realize that she's channeling, and they tell her that she will see the same fate as Egwene if she fights back.
Mm-hmm.
So she watches as Leandrin runs her fingers through Sandar's hair, and mm-hmm. it's like she's petting a dog, it says, and she says that he had to be persuaded to serve. But I am very good at persuading, no? oh, she's such a maniac. She's so mm-hmm. evil.
Yes.
And Nynaeve realizes that they did something to him. This isn't just like a dark friend or he turned on them. Like, they did something to him. He's acting like their dog.
Yeah.
And the girls are bound by channeled air, so they can't do anything. And they're put into a coach with a banner that flies of black and white of a hand holding lightning bolts. And she figures this is for High Lord Saman, and he must be a dark friend, obviously, if he's working with mm-hmm. these girls. And, you know, yeah, I mean, worse than that. So they also realize that that's where they're headed to. They're headed to the Stone of Tyr. And Nynaeve threatens that if they kill Egwene, you know, they better watch out, basically. She doesn't even get her full sentence out. She's like, if you guys killed Egwene, and Rihanna laughs, and she's like, listen, we didn't kill Egwene. She's fine. We need live bait. You guys are no use to us if you're dead. And Nynaeve shouts to them that they are the bait, and that they have fallen into another trap of their own, and that surely that they don't think that three barely accepted would be sent alone. And Elaine kind of like plays along and says like, no, don't tell her anything. Like, don't tell her of our trap. I thought it was really clever because like he wrote that Nynaeve could see that Elaine was adding to her weaving.
Right.
Like, I thought that was a really cool way to write how they are, you know, I don't know. I thought that was cool. And I yes. also thought it was, I liked seeing them work together so well and start to like understand how to, you know, like pick up on each other's like signs and stuff like that.
Yes, it was teamwork for once.
Yeah. Unspoken and not clunky. For once, it wasn't Elaine being like, I am the daughter of Queen of Andor.
Yes, as she usually does.
So Leandrin either believes her or not, but she says, we will hear all from you eventually when we're finished with you. And that Balal is sending for 13 Myrdral. And suddenly, as she laments in her mind of what's to come, Leandrin and Rihanna channel air to squeeze her, Elaine, and Egwene even harder, and Elaine and her scream, barely muffling the laughs of the Black Aja, and that is the end of this chapter.
Ooh, God.
Yikes.
Scary.
I don't know.
Do you remember in the very beginning of book two when Leandrin is with the Lady Amalisa?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of does...
That pinprick channeled her and, like, is, like, keeping... compelling her to say...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of what happened to Julian as well.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. So, chapter 52 is called In Search of a Remedy, and the sigil for this one is a harp, because we are back with Matt and Tom. Hmm. Tom is sick.
Very.
Very sick, because, again, Matt dragged him all around town in the rain. Although he was kind of sick before that.
All night long. And he was drunk.
Yes. And he was drunk. So he's taking him to a wise woman, which is how they refer to a wisdom in Tyr. And Matt thinks to himself, like, wow, wouldn't Nynaeve love that, being called a wise woman? And Tom is like, I don't need that. I don't want that. I'm not doing this. I don't need, quote, any foul-tasting concoctions poured down my throat. Matt drags him to his feet anyway, and as he does, is kind of like... amazed at how much he's having to support Tom to get him like up and moving. So he's clearly not doing well. And they make their way to the wise woman's house. And Matt is like, I totally passed this on the first night. How weird. Cause he remembers like the herbs hanging in the window. And he's like, this area stinks of fish.
Jerk. I'm so mad.
there's a moment where there's like a couple paragraphs where, you know how RJ is describing like the streets of the mall are like muddy and, you know, not paved and all of that kind of stuff. There's a moment where RJ talks a lot about like hoof prints and how they're like already starting to disappear under like footprints and I guess under footprints. Yeah. And so, but Matt is kind of like wondering where those horses would have been going. And maybe I just answered my own question actually. So they knock on Mother Genna's door and she's like, what do you want? Very tired. Matt says, can you do something to help my friend's cough? He's very sick. She brings him inside against Tom's wheezing protest. And when they get inside, Matt kind of like looks and sees out the back window. He sees three good horses tied out there. And he's like, that's surprising because I wouldn't have thought a woman in this neighborhood would be able to have one nice horse, let alone three of them. Mm-hmm. And so that I realized must have been the hoof prints he was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Theirs. Okay, because yeah, okay, that makes sense. Okay. So Mother Gunna brews some tea stuff and essentially like whips her arm around Tom and pulls him into a headlock and pours the tea down his throat and holds his nose when he tries to complain and tries to not drink it. And Matt's like thinking to himself, like, damn, she's like pretty strong.
Yeah.
And Tom says, there's a lot of like pauses, which I'm not going to do, but he says, I don't know whether you'd mean to drown me or kill me with the taste. You ought to be a bloody blacksmith. So she kind of chastises Tom and instructs him that you'll take the rest of this tea every day for twice a day. There's a salve, blah, blah, blah.
And that's the tea. That's the tea, sis.
While I was reading this section, all I could think about was my dad, because Tom is being like the biggest baby with medicine, and my dad is not good about doctors and medicine, so I was very
Neither
much thinking
is
of him.
Mine.
Yeah. So she gives Tom those instructions, and as she's speaking, Matt notes that her speech pattern reminds him of the Amrelin, and so he says, I knew a woman who talked like you, all fish and nets and things. Sounded like you, too. I suppose she's Tyrin. And Mother Gunna says, perhaps. And then she kind of, like, stares at the floor and is like, I knew some girls with the sound of your speech on their tongues, too. Two of them had it anyway. And Matt kind of, like, gets goosebumps and is like, I can't be this lucky. And he's like, were their names Nynaeve, Elaine, and Egwene? And is this what they look like? And Mother Gunna is like, they didn't use those names, but those are their descriptions. And then she says, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And Matt's like, what do you mean? And she's like, I can't speak about it. You're asking me to talk about something that people threaten to kill me if I speak about it. And so Matt says that he swears an oath not to tell anybody her name. And she's like, okay, fine, I'll tell you. Mm. So she says, about 3 hours ago, the girls were taken to the stone by women who could channel. And that those women are connected to the High Lords of Tyr, which she thinks is weird because channeling is illegal in Tyr. And so why would they like associate with them and have their guests and be supporting them? So Matt is like, Aes Sedai took them. Like, calm down. They're obviously fine. They're going to be Aes Sedai themselves. Not that I'm happy about it, but that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no. And says, boy, these girls fought like lionfish in a net. Whether they mean to be Aes Sedai or not, those who took them treated them like bilge pumpings. Friends do not give bruises like that. And Matt's like, oh, fuck. So he asks Mother Gunna if Tom can stay with her because he realizes Tom is going to be useless because he's sick. And says he's going to go get them out of the Stone of Tyr. And Mother Gunna is like, uh-huh, you, one guy, are going to rescue them from a High Lord breaking into one of the biggest, strongest fortresses that's ever been built. Okay, sure. But she agrees to take care of Tom anyway.
I feel like I'm glad she told him everything, obviously.
Yes.
But
yes.
I'm like really scared for her now.
For Mother Gunna?
Yeah.
So Matt grins at Tom and says, I've enjoyed knowing you, Tom, and heads out the door thinking about how to get into the Stone of Tyr. And then he kind of has a little idea and he cackles to himself as he takes off running for the inn that he and Tom had been staying at. And that's the end of 52.
Hmm. This is so exciting.
I know we're really getting to the fast chapters, the fast point of view switches.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm always ready.
Oh, this is crazy. So this is chapter 53. It's called A Flow of the Spirit. And the little icon is a wolf, which means our boy Perrin, usually. And the
Isn't
wolf dreams.
Isn't it a flow of spirit?
Oh, what did I say? The flow of the spirit?
Yeah.
Let me see. I'm sure you're right, but I just need to check for my own mind to feel better.
Because you but don't I trust me. You.
I do. I said I do trust you. See how funny that is? At the same time as you were saying something. No, it's
nasty.
A flow of the spirit. You're wrong. I'm right.
Oh, it is. Are you sure? Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I guess you're looking at it.
I'm looking at the book. I got the receipt. I'm bringing this for the reunion. So Perrin is in the like smithy place at the Star Inn. And he's making something, being watched by Zareen, which he's not wild about. He knows that they have to stay close together and, you know, he's responsible for her now and they have to be at the inn. But this just makes him feel really awkward and irritable. No one likes being watched while you're working, especially at a creative thing.
Or doing something hard and, like, physical.
Exactly. And parents, you know, parents are a little awkward, so.
Yeah.
He even almost accidentally, at one point, calls Fayil by her name. Tell me you love me in private. And she says, you will fall yet, blacksmith. Hey, have you ever thought about a beard? And Perrin's like, oh, this is so annoying. I can't stand this. And he cannot shake the thought. I feel like every chapter we've seen with Perrin, since he's met Fayil, he cannot shake the thought that maybe she's the girl that Min warned him about.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, there's no way she can't be the Falcon. But he keeps saying it, and it's making me crazy. I trust Fayil, though.
I'll say something about that at the end of the book.
Okay. Lan and Moraine show up, and I mean, right after, and say that Rand is nearby. But Perrin's like, what? No. When Rand's nearby, everything's crazy. Everything's fine. Nothing's weird.
And right, Lan is getting married. There's no white cloak setting things on fire for once.
No big deal. Everyone's fine. And Lan's like, are you kidding me? And it says, quote, don't you listen to rumors, blacksmith? The warder said. There have been marriages as many in the last 4 days as in half a year before, and as many murders in a whole year. A child fell from a tower balcony today, 100 paces onto stove paving. She got up and ran to her mother without a bruise. The first of Maeyn, a guest in the stone since before the winter, announced today that she will submit to the will of the High Lords, after saying yesterday she would see Maeyn and all of its ships burned before one Tyran country lord set foot in the city. They had not brought themselves to torture her. Am I mispronouncing something?
I say Maeyn.
Oh, really?
The pronunciation on the Wheel of Time encyclopedia says Maeyn, but I like Maeyn.
I like Maeyn.
Well, whatever. We'll arrive at a conclusion together.
Okay. And then he goes on to say, they had not brought themselves to torture her, and that young woman has a will like iron. So you tell me if you think it might be Rand's doing, blacksmith. From top to bottom, tear bubbles like a cauldron. And I'm like, yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff. It's like,
that's a lot.
Do you ever see A Hunchback of Notre Dame, the cartoon?
The Disney movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It's like topsy-turvy day, but like, not fun.
You know what's funny is, I said that with such confidence, and I have seen it, but I realize I remember almost nothing about it. Like, the facts that I have are Jason Alexander's a gargoyle, there's an amazing song that the villain sings, the main character woman is absolutely Esmeralda, stunning. Mm-hmm. But that's all I really remember.
Underrated. Oh, so underrated. One of my favorite Disney songs of all time is in that movie. That's probably
the same
song.
Is it the villain song?
Well, he's in it too, but it's the protagonist song too. They're both
What's it called?
Out There. So, Perrin admits he's also been dreaming of Rand, and he's dreamt that he's holding that flaming sword, and then Zarinur's is like, wait, is this guy like a tall redhead? Does he have like, is he in a room with red pillars? Is he holding a sword that like is so bright you can barely even see? And she's like, oh my god, we're having the same dreams. Let's make out. Let's buy a house in Portland. but no, she's like freaked out by it. She's freaked out. Their parents even more freaked out. And it seems like everyone in Tyr has been having this dream. Moraine says she's heard it many, many times. And she says that she and Lan will head to Tyr, and she will take care of Balal. She says the other, you three, you guys and Loyal, you're going to go back to Tarvalon. And Fayil goes and says, okay, well, I'll go get Loyal, since he's mysteriously missing. And she goes up ahead. And Perrin follows shortly afterwards, but he doesn't find either of them right away. And then he enters a room, and he finds Fayil lying unconscious on the floor. And he's instantly shocked, and he goes to rush towards her. But Moraine enters the room right then, and is like, no, don't go near her. Stay away. Don't be a fool. And he like she pushes him aside and examines her like carefully without touching her. And Lan is right next to her, and then Perrin is starting to feel a tingle in his arm, and he's like having to like open and close his hand to suppress it. And he's basically like, okay, someone better tell me what's going on. Like, what is going on? She's on the ground. And Moraine is like, stop. Leave me alone. I need to focus. But Perrin is like, what the fuck? Like, no one is telling me anything, and he's realizing how important it is for him to see her be okay. Like, he feels a great responsibility for her, maybe more, but he's really, really upset. And suddenly, Murray notices that fallen out of her hand, right next to Fail, is a small carved hedgehog, which we know is one of the missing Tarangriel that sends people to sleep, that makes people fall asleep when they touch it, from what we know about it.
Love a carved stone hedgehog. I think that is so cute.
Same. I need to figure out a little bit more about exactly how it works based on this chapter to see how much I display it. But yeah. I want it anyway. Moraine knows this was a trap set for her, actually, and she realizes that Fail had run ahead for Loyal, otherwise that would be her on the ground, possibly. And she senses spirit around them, and spirit around the item, and she sensed it earlier, probably when it worked. And Lan fetches the innkeeper, and Moraine is in full-on, like, angry customer mode, and she is like, I said, no one enters my room. No one. Who entered this room? And he's like, there were just these two ladies. I'm sorry. They were going to leave you a cute little gift. It was really cute.
They showed it to me. It's a really cute hedgehog. Yeah,
and he was like, it was supposed to be a surprise. And she's like, oh, I was surprised. And she says, listen, you better keep your mouth shut about all of this, or I will pull this in down until there's nothing but a hole in the ground.
Dang.
And I was like, drag him, Moraine. He asks, or Perrin asks now if Fail is dead, and Moraine is like, no, she's okay, but, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on. And then she starts talking with Lan, and the two of them are talking about how this trap must have been set by the Black Aja for Bilal, and, or, you know, on Bilal's request. And since it was sprung, maybe, that they'll assume it worked on Moraine and they'll be able to arrive undetected. Mm-hmm. And Perrin's off to the side like, hello, like, what is wrong with her still? This is all great, but... And Moraine is like, listen, I'm not really sure, not much is known about this, but I don't think she's in her body anymore. She breathes normally, but there's minutes between her heartbeats. And Perrin is like, is this like what they do to gray men? And it says that Moraine shook her head. Didn't say if that meant yes or no. That meant no, right? Because I guess it would have said nods.
Oh, she's shaking her head no.
Okay, good. I was like, this doesn't really exactly say that, but Perrin demands more info, like whatever you have. And she says, quote, I have remembered the little I know of what connects a carved hedgehog with spirit. The carving is a Tarangriel, last studied by Corianne and Nandil, the last dreamer the tower had. The talent called dreaming is the thing of spirit, Perrin. It is not a thing I have ever studied. My talents lie in other ways. I believe that Zareen has been trapped inside a dream, perhaps even in the world of dreams, Teleron Riad. All that is her is inside that dream. All. A dreamer sends only a part of herself. If Zareen does not return soon, her body will die. Perhaps she will live on in the world of dream. I do not know. Ooh, that is wild. Being trapped in the dream world?
Yeah.
Lost. Isn't that a great song? Lost. Oh, that's Lost in Her Eyes.
Speaking of songs, I just had to quickly look up the Hunchback of Notre Dame song. My favorite is Hellfire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a really scary song.
Yes, I love it. I mean, the villains usually have the best song, like Poor Unfortunate Souls.
Oh my god, yes.
Be Prepared. The Beast never sings.
Yeah, but he's not the villain. Oh, Gaston is the villain in that.
Oh, right. And I guess actually the Beast does sing.
Right. Anyway, so that is right. The Beast sings through the
through the whole movie. He has like one verse in the something there that's nothing that wasn't there.
Is that the only time he sings?
I think that's it.
You know, it's funny. I know every word to that song. I used to watch that scene on Disney sing along songs on VHS all the time.
Listen to this. My cousins and I loved Beauty and the Beast. We literally watched it multiple times a day, every single day of the winter break while eating blueberry candy canes.
I love that memory. I love that.
Don't you love those stupid things your brain holds on to, like blueberry candy? It might have been raspberry, but it was like a blue striped candy cane kind of thing.
I love those.
Oh yeah, regular candy canes suck. Like the flavored ones are great.
I like both, but I like a fun flavor. You know,
Yes.
You're not a mint apple. You're not a mint person.
I'm not really a mint person. No.
No. Anyway, back to the. She Moraine also says now that they have to go to Tyr, but he says, I can't, I have to stay. I have to stay with her. I'm not leaving her. And Moraine is like, okay, suit yourself. I hope you live. And her and Lan leave. She literally says that. And yep. Loial finally returns. I don't know where Loial's been, missing all of this, but...
He's Loial, probably reading a book.
Yeah, he just comes back, like, washing his hands of some ink, and he's like, oh, hey, guys. And he's very distressed when he finds out the news of Fael, and Perrin asks if he will watch his back as he tries to save her, because he thinks this is the same dream world, probably, that I can go to. And Loial is like, okay, I got you. You know, you're my best friend. I love you. So I imagine it. And Perrin leaps towards her, it says, and as he makes contact with her ankle, he is in the dream world instantly. And he looks at himself, and he's wearing the leather smith vest, and he's holding a hammer at his side instead of his axe, but it feels right. And Hopper is there. And Hopper says that the dream world has been more dangerous than ever lately. He shouldn't be here. There's a lot of mentions of the cries that have come out. And that's just like the calling to Perrin, maybe? I don't really know what that meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what it means, okay. Yeah.
And then he mentions, like, even the wolves are afraid to dream with one another lately. And then it says, and this is Perrin speaking, he says, no, Fael is here somewhere, trapped. I have to find her, Hopper, I have to. He felt the shifting inside him, something changing. He looked down at his curly-haired legs, his wide paws. He was an even larger wolf than Hopper. You are here too strongly. Every sending carried shock. You will die, young bull. If I do not free the falcon, I do not care, brother. Then we hunt, brother. Noses to the wind, the two wolves ran across the plain seeking the falcon. And that is the end of the chapter, and I almost wanted to cry.
I love that chapter. Number one, because I love the hedgehog, but also I just think it was such a interest. Like, I feel like in previous books, when they've gotten to kind of like the final chapters, like everyone's sort of wrapped up in the same thing. And I like this sort of like, shoving Perrin to the side for his own distinct storyline, separate from like the super big event that's going on.
Yeah. You know? I also feel like that they all have something very different going on, you know?
Yes.
Even the ones that are more closely connected, like Matt has something totally different, and we have really very limited information on what's been going on with Rand this whole time. But then we just are seeing him maybe here. You know, it's just wild. It's so much is happening. I can't believe there's only two more chapters left. How the hell are they going to fit this into 25 pages? Go ahead, your turn.
Well, there's three more chapters left, including mine.
I know, but I've read that chapter already. I mean,
okay.
I don't know what is going to happen after that.
By the way, when Perrin asks Loial to watch his back, I love his actual line of, none will pass me while I live, Perrin, not Myrdral or the Dark One himself. Mm. And RJ writes that he said it as a simple statement of fact.
He's
such
back.
A sweet boy.
He is. He's so loyal and he loves... No, I didn't even do that on purpose, I swear.
All right. Well, chapter 54 is called Into the Stone. And it made me think of that song from that musical that I've never listened... Yes, that one. So the sigil for this chapter is Matt's Dice. So we are back with Matt. I get two Matt chapters this week.
Mm-hmm. Lucky you. And you're talking to Matt.
Yes, so much Matt in my life. So he is on the rooftops of Tyr, and he's kind of like looking around and thinking, this is not a sensible place for a man to be at night, is like on the rooftops of a city.
No.
We learn he's been kind of scoping out the stone and assessing where he might be able to get into it and what his best strategy is for getting inside. And he's kind of seen this wall that gets right up to the fortress. And so he thinks kind of climbing atop that wall is his best chance at getting inside. So he's like, all right, picks up his quarterstaff. And he also has this small wire handled tin box and with him. And RJ comments that it's starting to get warm. And on his back, he has a bundle of the fireworks that he was given by Aludra. Mm-hmm. So Matt kind of looks again at the stone and he's like, I must be such an idiot to do this, because he realizes that like he has to jump a 3-foot gap and there is a drop of 70 paces to the ground. I think he's like on the third story of a building or something right now.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly there's steel across his throat, and without thinking, he kind of like tries to use his staff to knock somebody's feet out from under him. But just as quickly, someone knocks him off his feet, and suddenly there's two blades at his throat, and he looks up to see two people whose heads and faces are covered, and Matt at first is like, are there thieves on the rooftop of Tyr? So he's like, listen, I'm not looking to get in your way. I'm not gonna tell on you.
I'm not gonna turn you in.
Betray you. Yeah, I was fully in a playground when I said that. I'm gonna tell on you. So you know, let me go. You go your way, I'll go mine. We zip, boop, boop. We don't have to say a word. But they don't respond immediately. And so he's kind of like, okay, am I going to have to fight my way out of this? So he like starts to tighten his grip on his quarterstaff. And just then a third person stomps down hard on his wrist, preventing him from doing anything.
It is like, okay, guys, we all have the same idea.
Yeah. So they don't. So he looks at the third person who is now stomped on his wrist. And he's like, oh, these aren't thieves. These are Aiel. And so one of them, a young woman who he kind of saw or who he knocked her from her feet, says, you dance well for one caught by surprise. Perhaps one day I will have time to dance with you properly. And Matt like starts to grin, thinking she's flirting with him and like, oh, she wants to dance with me. But then realizes that that's how Aiel referenced like trying to kill each other.
Durr.
So they pull their spears back and lift him to his feet and ask him what he's doing on the roofs of Tyr. And just then, another voice says, I could ask the same of all of you, and out steps Julin Sandar. And he thinks, you know, they must all be thieves, and he's gonna report them to the High Lords.
Party on the roof.
And Matt is like, how many people are on the roofs tonight? Anyone else? Anyone? Bueller? So the Aiel say that they're no thieves, but they've also seen Julin watching the stone, and they ask him why. And Julin confesses that he did something today that he regrets. And part of him is telling him that it was right, but there's and that he must obey. But there's this small voice in the back of his head that's telling him he betrayed something. Ugh. Mm-hmm. So one of the Aiel introduces himself as Ruark. And he's going to be a character that we'll get to know a little more. So FYI.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he tells that Julin that he means no harm to the people of the city. And he asks Matt again, like, okay, but why are you here? Because you haven't answered that. And Matt sassily says that, I just thought I'd go for a walk in the moonlight. And the spears are immediately at his throat again. And there's this very, like, comic book moment where he, like, takes a finger and, like, just slowly presses the spear away from his throat. And he's like, I'm here to bring... Some of my friends are trapped inside the stone, and I'm here to break them out.
I love that moment when he puts the spear away just with his two fingers, like, trying to be, like, casual about it.
Yes. And so then another Aiel says, it's time, Ruark. And he's like, yes, Gaul. Remember Gaul?
Yes. Yes.
From a couple chapters, I don't probably half a book ago with Perrin.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there as well.
Gaul.
And everyone kind of agrees not to mess with each other's plans. And the Aiel leave. And Julin kind of realizes that Matt is after Egwene, Nynaeve, and Elaine. And says, okay, I can help you. You can pretend to be a prisoner and I can take you to the cells and then we can break them out. And Matt's like, okay, good, let's do that. But he wants to create a distraction to draw attention away from him and like, you know, get guards on somewhere else. So he sprints over to the wall close to the stone and through an arrow slit, he kind of wedges the bag of the fireworks that he has. Because he's like, I want so many lights and sounds going off that everyone is drawn here.
Smart.
So, yeah. So he tied all the fuses together, and in that little tin box that he has a hot coal, and he pulls that out and uses it to ignite the fuses. So he immediately starts running away from the lit fuses, and is mid-thought when RJ writes, the roar behind him was louder than anything he had ever heard in his life. A monstrous fist punched him in the back, knocking all the wind out of him even before he landed, sprawled on his belly on the wall top, barely holding onto his staff as it swung over the edge. For a moment, he lay there, trying to make his lungs work again, trying not to think how he must have used up all his luck this time by not falling off the wall. His ears rang like all the bells in Tarvalon. And he looks back and sees, like, looks at the arrow slit and is like, that's a lot bigger. Like, there's a big hole in the wall now. And he's like, I don't understand how this happened.
I mean, but he didn't it just explode?
Yes, but remember this, like, they've only got, like, swords and stuff. They don't really have explosives.
Yeah. But he threw the stuff into the fire before and saw it, like,
crackle and pop.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess they wouldn't really understand what that would look like with all of that together.
Right. So he's like, big hole in the wall, and decides to just run over there and jump on through and get in the stone that way. And Julian chases after him. And as he jumps through, he, like, immediately sees himself face to face with 10 defenders of the stone, because he's like, oh, right, I did this because I wanted to get everyone to come to this spot as a distraction. Oops. And so he realizes he's now going to have to fight a bunch of people. So he, like, launches himself at the defenders and kind of manages to beat a few of them with his quarterstaff. And then he sees Juilin right beside him, also helping him fight off the guards. And he's like, I am going to be executed for this. Like, I'm attacking defenders of the stone. They will put me in prison. And so he looks at Matt while they're kind of fending off people with their quarterstaffs. And says, what was that you did, gambler? That flash of light and thunder breaking stone. Did you call lightning? And RJ writes, his voice fell to a whisper. Have I joined myself to a man who can channel? And Matt says, fireworks. And then says, take me to the cells. And they run off. Then we get a POV shift to Rand, who hears the roar of Matt's firework explosion. And I feel like I've talked about this before, but I love in the books when there's the moment of something being repeated, like a repeated event being seen from different points of view. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
Me too. I love that. So, it puts it really, like, on the timeline so firmly.
Totally. Yeah. So he hears that explosion and he is making his way downtown through the Stone of Tyr, and he thinks to himself, I will finish it at last. One way or another, it will be done with. The dream's finished, the baiting, the taunting, the hunting. I'll finish it all. And he cackles and keeps running, and then we get another point of view shift. We're with Egwene, and she is coming to consciousness inside of the prison cell where she, Elaine, and Nynaeve are being held prisoner. She recognizes that she's imprisoned, and because she has straight-up PTSD from being enslaved by the Seanchan, she starts panicking and screaming immediately. Mm-hmm. But Nynaeve and Elaine are there, and they, like, start soothing her and are like, it's okay, like, we're alive, we're here, we're together. She realizes that she's shielded and can't channel, and Nynaeve tells her that I said Amiko, didn't I?
Before?
Yeah. But I like Amiko. I don't know. Whatever her name is. Sitting outside and is maintaining the shield on them. So essentially, we learn that once a shield is in place, it requires far less strength to maintain it. That's how she can keep them shielded, even though all three of them are much more powerful. Mm-hmm. So Elaine says that Leandrin had said they were bait, and Nynaeve shakily asks to herself, bait for who? If I am bait, then I'd like to shove myself down their throats till they choke on me. Oh, I love her so much. Mm-hmm. Egwene realizes that they must be bait for Rand, because she had been having the dreams of him coming for Kalendor. And she's like, Rand must be here. And she says to both of them, do not be so afraid. We will escape somehow. If we could better the Seanchan, then we can best Leandrin. And I love this because I feel like this is one of the first times that we see Egwene sort of, like, asserting confidence and soothing Nynaeve.
Yeah.
So, growth, character growth. Elaine and Nynaeve, like, exchange a glance with each other, and they're like, by the way, Leandrin said 13 Myrdral are coming, Egwene. And Egwene is like, oh, fuck, realizing this means that there's 13 Black Aja, there's 13 Myrdral. They all three could be turned to the shadow. And so she's like, I would rather die than that. So she's like, we got to figure something out. Egwene realizes that they hadn't fully searched her and that she still has the stone ring. And so she says that she thinks even though she's shielded in the dream world, she thinks she can channel. And so she's like, I've got to try something. So Nynaeve says, what if the Black Aja are in Teleron Riad? And Egwene says, I hope they are. And they begin to try to, like, soothe Egwene back to sleep so she can awaken the dream world. And she awakens in Teleron Riad and embraces Sidar and can feel and feels triumphant because she can channel. She shifts herself to the heart of the stone and sees Joya Bayir, who is, like, surprised to see her there. But Egwene acts fast and weaves flows of spirit and cuts Joya off from the source and then weaves flows of air and holds her tight. Joya is nonplussed and basically laughs in her face and is like, we're in a dream. You can't, this is not real. You can't affect the real world here. And Egwene smiles and says, are you certain you will wake, dark friend? If your Tarangriel requires channeling, why did you not wake as soon as I shielded you? Perhaps you cannot wake so long as you are shielded here. And RJ writes, her smile faded away. The effort of smiling at this woman was more than she could bear. And Egwene says, a woman once showed me a scar she received in Teleron Riad, dark friend. What happens here is still real when you wake. And Joya starts to sweat nervously. And Egwene, remembering what the women, what the Black Aja had done to them when they caught them, she starts weaving flows of air and beating the shit out of Joya Bayir. And she says, you will remember this and feel it when you waken, when I allow you to waken. Remember this too, if you ever try to beat me again, I will return you here and leave you here for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which we know can happen because of Fael.
Yeah, yeah. So Egwene realizes she's kind of wasting time with Joya and needs to focus on getting her and Nynaeve and Egwene, or Lane, out of the cell. So she had woven those weaves, the, like, beating stick weaves, and had, like, tied it off so she didn't have to maintain it. And after a moment, she unravels those weaves and says to Joya, I am not like you. This is the second time I have done something like this, and I do not like it. I am going to have to learn to cut throats instead.
Egwene.
I know. She makes kind of, like, a disgusted sound, leaves her standing there, trapped and shielded, and hurries off into through the polished redstone columns, thinking that she's got to be able to find a way down to the cells from here. Then we get a POV shift to Perrin. He's in Teleron Riad as well. There's like defenders of the stone who seem to find themselves surprised to be there, but they're attacking him because he's a big fucking wolf. And he like tears out their throat with his teeth. And then Hopper says, we must hurry. There is something evil near. And Perrin is like back in human form at this point and holding a hammer, and he bashes open the door that the men were guarding. And inside he sees Fael lying on a stone in the middle of the floor, wrapped up in chains. He walks up and kind of like strokes her cheek with his finger, and she opens her eyes and says, I kept dreaming you would come, blacksmith. But then she fades into nothing and the chains holding her drop to the floor.
Ooh.
And Perrin cries out in upset, and Hopper says to him that this dream is not like the worlds of flesh, young bull. Here the same hunt can have many endings. And Perrin says, then I will hunt again. And they take off running through the halls of the stone for Fael. Then we get a point of view shift back to Matt, and we hear alarm bells or alarm gongs being sounded in the stone, and he hears Aiel fighting with defenders, and Matt is like fighting with a High Lord of Tyr who is pulling the classic movie villain act of telling him all of the horrible things he's going to do to him. And Matt is like, I don't think I'd like that. And that surprises hit the High Lord, and Matt manages to get the advantage and knocks him out. I'm always unclear when, like, you hit somebody in the head with a quarterstaff. Do you think they're dead?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean,
I always wonder, because I feel like...
How hard, I guess, or where, but I wouldn't think so. I would think more unconscious.
And it's pretty thick, so, like, I always think of it as, like, if you hit somebody really hard in the head with a baseball bat, that would kill them, right?
A wooden one?
Yeah.
I guess.
I don't know. Haven't hit many people with baseball bats.
Yeah, no,
so
not me either.
Somebody out there, tell me which wins, skull or baseball bat. Also, there's this cute little comedy movie moment where Matt, in a moment of speaking animatedly to Duilin, accidentally like swings his quarterstaff and like hits a man in the face, knocking him out. And Duilin is like, what? And Matt's like, luck. And then they head down to the cells. He's giving Jui Lin one-word answers, and I'm living for it.
Same.
And that is the end of chapter 54, Into the Stone.
Mm. Wow.
Now, Matt, last time we read book two, you were naughty, and you read ahead. Mm-hmm. Have you done that this time?
No. No.
Ooh, okay.
I did not. I waited.
So we're going to get a fresh hot take on the final two chapters next episode.
Yeah, I might have to read it just tomorrow instantly and okay, do it right fine. Away. But yes,
I understand.
I stopped myself. I just counted the number of pages left for me to read, and there's only 25 for me, for my book.
My gosh.
I know.
What was your favorite part of these chapters? I feel like we had a lot to pick from.
It's hard to pick. I am firmly between Perrin realizing how much he cares about Fael.
Right.
I like that moment. Like when he says, like, I'll never call you at one moment, and he's like, if you come back, I'll never call you by your by Zareen again.
It's right. Cute.
But I think more I really like Egwene's whole dialogue with what's her name in the dream world?
Joya.
Joya. Yeah. I loved that moment because it's like, it reminds me of in, like, Jean Grey when she becomes the Phoenix or something. You know what I mean? It's just so I'm stepping into my power. This is, like, the moment I need to do it. And, you know, last time she was there, like, she was too scared. But this time she's like, oh, hell no.
Yeah. I like that part a lot, too. And I like it because I think it really highlights that, you know, really what distinguishes us as good from bad are the choices that we make, especially the choices that we make when we are in a position of power. And she realizes in that moment that she doesn't want to be that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's such a important, like, character realization, because so many people in these books have such tremendous power and could do and do so much damage in so many different ways with it. And she's making it clear that she doesn't want to be that kind of person.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. Coming back to what I said, but about Fael and Perrin, I don't think this spoils anything for you. So you mentioned how Perrin is always kind of like wondering, you know, is she the Falcon? Is she the most beautiful woman ever? Who Min told me to be afraid of. I think that that's just RJ's way of showing the reader that Perrin clearly is developing feelings for an attraction to Fael by thinking that she could be the most beautiful woman in the world without Perrin acknowledging it mentally yet.
That's true. That makes sense.
Yeah. And which is, honestly, I am I'm so amazed sometimes with how Robert Jordan brings those things together. Like the fact that he thought, I'm going to show Perrin's developing of feelings for Fael through this prophecy that he heard last book is bananas.
Yeah, he's really good at like writing these very nuanced moments and emotions.
Yes, yes.
Whew.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite part of the book too. I told you about Fael. Okay, so we've got two chapters left. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Where are we going? How is this going to wrap up?
I don't know where this book is going to end.
Okay.
So I don't know if we're going to see it at the end of this book or the beginning of next book.
Okay.
But I feel like with Rand, I really don't know where. I couldn't even tell you what's going to happen with him. I don't know what his mindset is, really, barely. He just wants to get the sword and have it all be over with.
Yes.
I don't know how easily influenced he will be in this final showdown and all that. I don't know if he'll have the sword and keep the sword. I think he will get the sword for sure. I don't know if he'll keep the sword or if it'll be stolen by Bilal. And so, yeah, I think he'll get the sword, but I don't know if he'll keep it, which worries me.
Yeah.
Let's see. Egwene and Co. are going to escape. I don't know what's going to happen as far as the 13, because I feel like all 13 Black Aja are required.
Yes.
And one is now trapped in the dream world.
Yes.
I feel like that at least temporarily saves them from their, like, initial worry about, like, being, because they could steal you, right? All 13?
Yes.
So that's good. And then my thoughts on Perrin.
Do you think he'll rescue Fael, or do you think she'll be stuck in the dream world?
I don't think she'll be stuck in the dream world, but I don't think we're going to get a conclusion to that in this book. That would be way too soon, I feel like, with two chapters with everything else going on. Okay. So I don't know if that's going to be reconciled this book. But I don't think she's going to ultimately be trapped in the dream world. I think she's coming back.
Okay.
And Matt and all that. I still think it's weird that Tom is just back at the inn. Like, that doesn't really sit with me. That's just too random.
Yeah.
But that we get him back for him to be at the inn at the end. So, I don't know. I feel like he might play a role that we just don't know about somehow, or already is.
Okay.
But with Matt, I feel like he's going to do the thing. Like, I feel like he's going to be the one that ultimately, like, whatever calamity is becoming them, I think Matt is going to be the key to, like, saving the day, essentially. Yeah, because I don't think this is going to go just like, oh, the legend and Kalendor, and you get it, and then that's it. Obviously, we have, like, so many more books.
Yes.
So, you know, this isn't going to go down like how we think it's going to go down. So,
yeah.
I think whatever calamity ends up ultimately happening, it's going to be up to Matt to kind of save the day, I feel like.
Which is new for him. Although, which I guess he blew the horn at the end of this second book. But
But I do have one thought that is troubling me still.
Okay.
I don't remember whose dream it was, but I think it was Egwene, where we saw the a woman in braids looking at people laughing, and then another woman in white looking at her and laughing.
Right.
That is Lanfear looking at Leandrin.
Uh-huh.
And that feels like it's happening in the Stone of Tyr. We've heard nothing about Lanfear in a long time. Where's Lanfear? Lanfear is going to be there.
What's she up to?
She's going to be there. And I had originally thought that the Black Aja were working for Lanfear. So now it turns out they're working for Balal.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, at least right now, for this purpose, it seems like. And if the vision said that Lanfear was laughing at the woman in braids, that means that she's watching all this go down and she's got other plans.
Mm.
So they're all in, I feel like they're all in like Lanfear's trap, ultimately. So I don't know what that means, but there's no way Lanfear's been in this whole book and she's been in a vision and then she's just gone. Sorry, no. That maniac Celine is right there.
Somewhere.
And I'm just dying to know what's going to happen. So those are my hot takes.
Nice. Well, if you would like to help us grow, the best thing you can do is to rate and review our podcast on whatever platform you're using to listen to our episodes.
Also, most people try a podcast because a friend recommended it. So if you're enjoying our show, please tell a friend, a coworker, a stranger, tell someone.
Leave a note in a shopping cart.
Be like Gilda.
So our social media is Cool Story Pod on Instagram and Cool Story Pod 1 on Twitter, and you can email us at coolstorypod@gmail.com. We love getting emails, so feel free to do the things and send us on a note.
And thank you so much for listening to Cool Story.
I am nailing the dismount. See you next week.
Bye.